This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 19th of October, 2021, and some interesting moves overnight with the US dollar. Before I get to that, a reminder, I am presenting a webinar today, an FX update webinar. You can sign up for that. Any last minute signups on webinars.saxo, and we'll make a recording of that available as soon as tomorrow. For those of you who are unable to attend live or have gotten the notification too late to join, I think there's lots to talk about. I'm putting together my slides, and there's just an awful lot of different themes for the various currencies. I think the FX space really heating up. So tune in for that. But yes, as noted, a big dollar move overnight, I think largely prompted by dollar renminbi breaking the levels that were sort of established as the range. If you go back to all the way to June and since then, so September, we touched this sort of 642.50 area a few times. And then it gave way in a big way yesterday. Generally, I would expect the weight of the dollar weakening elsewhere was prompting some of this. But this allowing the currency to strengthen to that degree is prompting, I think, this dollar reaction. We're joined today with Stein Jakobsen, Chief Investment Officer. And Stein, I'm really happy to have you on today because it feels to me like we're sort of, there's some trends and things going on right now that just seem incompatible in terms of to what degree they can extend higher, certainly higher short yields. Central banks really getting the memo and taking this tightening needs seriously, the Fed potentially behind the curve. But then we have commodities prices and particularly on energy really spiking out of control. Yes, the natural gas situation is perhaps nominally under control over the last few days. What's your take here? And especially, you know, we're seeing equity markets just absolutely ripping higher, perhaps driven in part by seasonals. But where do you think the weak points are and what this market is thinking and doing right now?
I think the market is coming. I don't think Fed may be behind. They are behind and they are desperate to normalize interest rate. And by normalize, they mean they will take them to a level where they can actually cut rates again, where if needed. They're still in that realm of how they interpret things. But I think we need to expand a little bit on your startup here, because cryptocurrency is also flying. And I think to a large extent, what's going on right now is that the market still perceive equity as a better hedge. Because if you think that Fed is behind the curve, and if you think that the market for bonds is poor, then there are two outlets, really, commodities and equity, that at least in the early parts of this repricing phase will follow. And of course, the argument here is that a number of the stocks that performed, in particularly in the NASDAQ, has no real high propensity or correlation to debt, which is one of Peter's constant reminders for us that these companies in the FANGs really have very, very little debt on the balance sheet. So I think first off, it will carry, but if it becomes deeper than that, of course, it will have a material impact on the convexity of interest rate, in particularly of companies with debt on the balance sheet. But for now, it's inflation, it's crypto. So it's everything but what the policy makers is telling us.
Yeah, and I pointed out yesterday as well, so at the very long end of the curve in the U.S., the 10-year was a little bit higher, but it's still below that previous little local high and not even threatening the 1.75% cycle high from back in the spring. And the 30-year even lower. Do you think the long end of the curve is telling us anything, or is it too early to make that judgment here?
No, I think it's telling us that the Fed will have to hike rates. And as such, when you look at the longer end of the curve, of course, you now build in that there will be hikes, which will in the market's interpretation, will be able to contain some of the inflationary risk. So I think it's very natural that you have a steepening. But as a good friend of ours keeps reminding us, why would you even look at 10 and 30 year US yields when all the action is going to be in the 2 to 5 years, where they are hugely behind and where you see the bigger adjustments in terms of interest rates?
Yeah, and to emphasize that point, where other central banks are, I mean, we saw over the weekend those Bank of England, the Governor Bailey comments, spiking interest rates in the UK. We're now at 88% the market is pricing for a November rate hike from the Bank of England. Of course, we saw the CPI out of New Zealand. They're expected to potentially go 50 basis points at their November meeting. And a curious case here, I put it up on slide 4, where you have the Aussie dollar, you know, pushing up into the highs of the range. And look at the, on the right there on slide 4, I put up So the three-month short-term interest rate future for the December for December of next year, essentially showing that we're clearly pricing rate hikes into late next year and early 2023, when the RBA's message is that it doesn't see the conditions in place for rate hike until 2024. The market has really been playing the RBA and the weak guidance there, and there's a massive short position. I just think there's a lot of room for mischief here. It looks like the market is really challenging the RBA's guidance here, and we're at critical levels on Aussie dollar, as you can see on the chart there. So, with even something like RBA, which is trying to keep expectations down, and you have the market challenging that, it's interesting to see the Fed lagging so far behind. And then we have commodities prices, as I note on slide three, putting it together with the dollar CNH chart, London Metals Index, which is a combination of six industrial metals. Among those, copper, which is one of the biggest ones, and it is challenging those all-time highs. It basically met those yesterday and is perched right at those highs, for the, all-time highs and highs for the cycle, obviously. And then the broader London Metals Index, composed of six metals, is bursting to new highs, led by aluminum and zinc. And then to emphasize your point, I'm kind of going backwards now, but you mentioned the low debt companies and those that are enjoying this market rally the most, being in NASDAQ 100, the big companies, big momentum companies and mega caps. As you can see on slide two, we've sort of rushed all the way through the last sort of key Fibonacci levels, not much separating us now from those all-time highs into 15,700. And in the equity theme baskets, the bubble stocks, crypto and blockchain, cybersecurity, these types of companies doing very well. I noticed that Tesla, for example, one of the more popular of the bubble stocks, is back towards those all-time highs. And then rounding out the FX space, we have Eurodollar. It's sort of the last one that needs to reverse here to suggest we're in a really firm dollar downtrend, as opposed to simply enjoying outperformance for commodity exposed and sort of more pro-cyclical currencies. You know, you could theoretically have a situation where the G3, so dollar, euro and yen, are weak, especially the yen, of course, as has been the case recently. And then other currencies are much stronger. But if we get much higher here in euro dollar, which moved quite a bit overnight, it's rare to see a move like that overnight. Again, I think prompted by the Chinese currency strengthening. But if we get through this 117 area in euro dollar, we're starting to look at a broader US dollar situation. And then I think those Fed behind the curve arguments could come into the picture a little bit. And then, Stane, we have quite an earnings season getting underway this week, in earnest. And we see the outlook there for the different names reporting on slide six. I saw interesting from yesterday from Philips, so the Dutch company that used to be a consumer goods company but is now concentrating on the health sector, complaining about what the CEO called chips and ships. So their shipping snarls and chip delays are messing up their ability to deliver. And he mentioned that they're looking to pass on price rises to consumers. Is that the kind of thing you're looking for from companies that are involved, as we've noted, the contrast between those involved in the physical world versus those that are more virtually based?
I think this quarter has two opposing forces in them. They have the massive unleash of demand from consumers. And on the opposite side sits what Philips talks about, this increasing tightness in supply. I think Q4 will be all about the tightness, because I think it's not only Philips, but anyone who has a sourcing business or a resource business is now indicating that not one, they have difficulty maintaining production, and two, they need to increase prices. I will expect that in Q4, we'll see a number of businesses who are sensitive to energy close down altogether for weeks or months. So I think particularly in Europe, where the energy crisis, and China, where the energy crisis is hitting the hardest, we will see production capacity come down quite significantly, and with that, the margin. So I think the stock market, we need to enjoy what's going on. As I said, I think there is a somewhat correlation between high inflation expectation and the early part of the equity cycle, but also classically, we get high enough. And just for the record, I expect interest rate to be high enough to have a material negative impact ultimately. But of course, as you indicated with the talk around the curve in the US, when you're trading 113 in 5 year and 203 in 30 years, it's still too early. I think the inflection point comes when we, in terms of the 10 year, passes 2%. But I do expect we in in a stepladder fashion can get there very, very quickly. So when the market starts to see what is going on in terms of Fed behind the curve and Fed getting desperate, we can have, you know, a quick 3x20 basis point move up and see direction. But right now, all of the focus is on energy. And I expect everyone who uses a lot of energy in production to come out with serious correction on their earnings.
Right. And then on that note, in today's mix of reports, we do have the Procter & Gamble, which is a massive consumer products company in the U.S. Be interested to see their talk about supply chains, pricing power, and the degree to which they pass on costs. And then I put up a chart of Halliburton, so one of the massive oil services companies. You can see where we are with a company like that, you know, barely up towards the early 2020 highs when we're at an oil price that reflects more like where we were back in 2018, where you can see when the company was trading north of $50 versus the current sub $30. So clearly that investment has been one of the key drivers. The lack of investment in the space has been a key driver of prices reaching where they have reached. And then there's one story. Well, there's actually one more thing there staying on, you know, this debt ceiling debate. It got punted to December 3rd. We've talked about the potential for Treasury supply dynamics to shift in Q4 with, you know, they sort of run down the reserves, the Treasury will run down reserves and needs to increase its issuance. So some more supply coming on board could mean higher yields. And then the fiscal situation is stalled in the U.S. So again, it's really difficult to understand where the balance is in terms of where these yields are because of the different factors, the supply versus demand versus the economic outlook. So do you think that that debt ceiling delay and getting over that hump is going to be a key event for the Treasury market, for yields?
I think it is, but for the record, I do think, of course, they will solve it. They need to solve it. Otherwise, of course, the US would default. But, you know, putting it in December is going to be very, very difficult to get some real traction apart from a mini compromise. Because, of course, by December, we are way into the midterm election in the U.S. So I do expect this to happen. But in terms of the impact on the liquidity provision up and down in terms of the Treasury account, it is to some extent a closed system. And yes, it does feed the banking reserves, obviously. But net, bigger impacts will come from fiscal, relatively speaking, because, and this is simply a matter of size, the relative flow over the next 3 months relatively to potential $4 trillion, $3.5 trillion worth of fiscal is far more important. So I would personally keep an eye on this debate that goes on between in the Democratic Party, between the sort of the radical left and the consensus-seeking mid-part. And then we are, again, represented by the West Virginia senator on this, Manchin, which over the weekend wrote a big editorial about how he see a maximum spending of $1 trillion. So, yeah, you know, with this combination of energy crisis, and, you know, one thing, I did a few presentation macro over the last couple of days, and far from being a Met guy, it's pretty clear that most people who follow weather is expecting a very, very cold winter, up to 80% probability of a colder than normal winter, simply because of the polar vortex is creating conditions for it. And then, of course, as all we constantly talk about, the La Nina is a colder than usual aspect as well. So a lot of precipitation and colder weather, which is going to make all this worse. So we are right now in the hands of the nature in terms of the weather for where we go on everything we just talked about.
And then there's a report out overnight or yesterday that didn't get so much coverage in the main press, financial press, but did get some coverage elsewhere. Uncovered basically that Fed Chair Powell did some stock transactions. I think it was October of last year, in the range of 1 to 5 million. These transactions were basically selling stocks. Could have been some portfolio rotation, whatever. And there was oversight by the ethics officer. But, you know, of course, some of the sources spinning this as a negative for Powell. It seems like we have the risk here. I mean, and we're closing in on the last bits of the time frame. We need to know who the next Fed chair is going to be. And we've seen a couple of interesting names circling. I've asked you about this before, but one that has cropped up that I hadn't thought about so much before, and it would be quite a shock, I think, to the market, would be the Atlanta Fed's president, Bostic. So I don't know. Do you have any sense of where this nomination process is headed, or and the implications?
Of course, I'm not on the inside here, but I'll be very surprised if it was busted, simply because the way that Biden has set up his cabinet and all of the major jobs around him has been on this based on this political correctness, right? So I still think our friend is the lady.
Brainerd
is still the suing. But of course, you know, Bostic also fits some of these profiles. So, and he's an extremely good governor. So it will be interesting to follow whether it's Bostic or Brainerd. I think it's a new Fed. But it's also a Fed which, as you said, has a higher moral ladder to climb, right? They are right at the bottom of the ladder right now with all these shenanigans going on with the stock trading. But that'll be interesting. I mean, Bostic is a relatively young man at 55, so he could be there for a long time if he took the office. And the same with Brainerd, who, as I remember, is pretty much the same age. So it's definitely a change from these very, very old governors that we had over the last two periods.
All right, let's shift to the macro calendar outlook and events for today. We end the rest of the week on slide 7. Lots of speakers out. ECB, there's so many ECB people jawboning. I don't want to cover that, but we have the UK Bank of England folks out. Governor Bailey is speaking, but it is on some climate change event. But do look for also Mann and Pill out speaking today. Quite interesting last names there. And as well, I think one of the more interesting ones, the Hungarian central bank rate decision today. They soft-pedaled their rate hike last time around relative to what the market was expecting. They're expected to do another small nudge today, but they need to pick up that guidance for rate hikes and credibility on inflation. You have Eurohuff trading up towards the top of the range. So interested to see as a microcosm for what's going on in Central and Eastern Europe.
Maybe I can break in there.
Yeah, I think you were just talking with Hungary this morning, weren't you?
Yeah. Funny enough, of course, I was just speaking to the Budapest Economic Forum, and the speaker after me was the finance minister, and he started by saying that the policy in Hungary has to be a combination of strict monetary and fiscal policy. So maybe that's an indication.
Yeah, be looking for signals there, especially just given where the foreign is trading. A rate announcement overnight. I suppose you're not expecting China to do any tightening. Staying given while the
I think they did one. They did that by allowing the currency to tighten, and I think that's the way you want to play it. So what they're doing in China right now is to reduce the cost of imports, which of course they have indicated is endlessly as long as this can be sourced.
Yeah, especially on the energy side, I would imagine that was one of the reasons I put the dollar CNH chart on the same page as the metals chart. They need to watch out for cost of living increases from those spiking energy import costs. And then, of course, tomorrow, as I mentioned, the Fed Beige Book is an interesting one as we watch for anecdotal comments on how Fed, what the Fed members and regions are surveying and hearing from their from activity in their various regions, especially on, all the things like we've talked about, labor supply shortages, a great Wall Street Journal article, which I've not worked through, talking about just we have a different labor force that's just different than it was pre-pandemic. Older people retiring, people not getting jobs, the bar being higher to want to get a job and participate in the workforce. It's a very different supply constrained situation, also aggravated by vaccine mandates, something the Fed, I don't think, is quite fully on top of in terms of the risks to wage inflation. I don't know if you agree with that, Steen. If the wage inflation is set to be the next thing that really spooks the Fed or spooks the market in terms of where inflation may be headed.
Absolutely. And I think there is a global change in the attitude towards wages, which we saw with Boris Johnson announcing that UK should be a high pay country, and Japan, where they're talking about the redistribution, is the central part of the new Japanese government. So, first we only had monetary policy, then we have fiscal stimulus, and now we have wage stimulus globally. So I think it's a major shift.
All right. Let's see what happens. I think the markets are building up a lot of energy here, and it's interesting to see how things shake out. And we'll see where things are tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.